Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. For the next 2 weeks, our special guest is Leslie Appleton-Young. Leslie is Vice President and Chief Economist for the California Association of Realtors, a statewide trade organization with over 150,000 members dedicated to advancement of professionalism in real estate. Leslie directs the activities of the association's members investment group or information group. She oversees the analysis of the housing market and broker industry trends, member communication, and membership development activities. She also is closely involved in the association's strategic planning efforts and is a well-known speaker in California. Leslie, welcome back to our show.
Thanks so much, Bruce. Nice to be here.
We've been doing this virtually since the good times sort of came to an end. So
well,
I guess
we have, haven't we?
I guess the first question is, how does 2012 feel compared to some of the past years that we've had to cope with?
Well, actually, I would say it's easily the best year we've seen in 5 years, and we're seeing that in our sales and finally in our price data. We've been above the 500,000 annual pace for 6 consecutive months, which is, a very healthy level of sales. You know, the issue has been prices, and what we saw in April is that the statewide median was 308,050, which is the first time we've been over 300,000 in over 2 years. So there's definitely stresses and strains in the market, but compared to where we've been, I think it's a sign of the times that the biggest challenge for the housing market, if I were to name the top issue, it's lack of inventory. And we're not just seeing it in the, REO, moderate and lower end of the market, but we're seeing it throughout all of the, prices in the housing spectrum. So that's a good news and sign of a continued healing in the market.
What do you point to as the reason for, I guess, first of all, the median price increase? Is that an actual increase, or is it a shift in inventory sold, or
kind of a
combination?
It's a little bit of both. Okay. It's a little bit of both. But certainly when you look at, what we've been doing the last couple of years is really analyzing the segments of the market that are really markets unto themselves. So we've got the REO market, we've got the short sale market, and we've got the equity sale market. And, prices in California bottomed way back in the kind of beginning of 2009.
Mm-hmm.
So we're about 25, in general, we're about 25% above the floor or the trough, if you will. And the REO market, and you're certainly familiar with this, and when you look at the Inland Empire, the strong, strong pace of sales that we had just coming out of the bottom was really testament to people, snapping properties up that were often, less than replacement cost and so on. And that world's changed a little bit because people have figured it out and you've got, multiple offer situations. You still have a very low inventory for REO, just to kind of like get into inventory for a minute and show the differences. So our April data, we've got a 2-month supply of REO on the market. So that's the ratio of listings to sales. We've got a 4.5-month supply of equity sales or traditional sales, where there's equity in the home. And then for the short sale category, we've got a 6.3-month supply in the market, and those obviously take a lot longer to close. So you've got these three separate markets, and I would argue that in the REO market, those prices firmed a while ago and have been, I think, showing some upward, not double digit like we were used to, when the lending was fueling the rise in prices, but that's that market went down so low, it certainly turned the corner. And I think we're starting, and the data shows we're starting to see some leveling off in the other parts of the market as well. So, you know, we're turning the corner. It's not a 90-degree turn, but it's definitely a turn.
I noticed in some of your presentations you have a kind of a price band page where the REO is priced at one price per, I don't know if it's price per square foot or a median price, and then the short sale and then the equity sale.
Right,
and there's a huge spread, and one might look at that and think there was big discounts being given on the REO, and I can tell you for a fact that that really isn't true.
No, and in fact, I typically don't include that unless I spend a lot of time explaining it, because it's not corrected for type of property and geography.
Okay.
So the moderate and lower priced communities have tended to have a much greater market share of distressed homes. And so that has kind of defined what a graph like that looks like.
From the peak of the market to this bottom in early 2009, what was the percentage drop?
About 59%, close to 60%. We went from May of 2007, the California median home price was $594,530. In February of 2009, it was $245,230. So that was a 59% peak to trough.
Inside of 2 years?
Yeah.
That's scary.
That is scary. That was, very, very significant.
And no precedent either. In other words, we had the 90s, and we thought those were kind of ugly until we had this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this was just a totally different animal, obviously.
Yeah. Now, the residual damage is that you have a lot of people that are upside down.
Absolutely. So I think the CoreLogic data is now just slightly below 30% of the mortgages in California are underwater.
And that makes that person really immobile. So they're no longer buyers. They may be short sale candidates, but they're not really a buyer.
Not yet. I mean, not until they go through some kind of a short sale. And that's why it's been so difficult to really get a good number for the number, this shadow inventory that everybody talks about, but seems to range from like 4 million to 11 million nationally or somewhere
right
in between. And a lot of it really depends on what will those people do, and some of them haven't paid on a mortgage in a while. Others are paying. Others are going to be able to pay until their arm adjusts. We've still got a few people in that category. So it's,
if their arm adjusts, the price per month might actually go down.
Right.
You can't get interest rates any cheaper.
Yeah.
The inventory, to me, has really changed since January. I mean, very much significantly down. Is that because sales are way up, or the inventory has actually really been diminished?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I think we've seen an acceleration in sales. And we also, I think, are seeing a reduction. I mean, if you look at the foreclosure radar data, for example, we've got a slight two-year downward trend in the number of properties that are getting a notice of default and going into and coming out of the foreclosure process. And there's a lot of, reasons for that as you look at an economy that's improving and peace there. We are seeing a few more loan mods coming through, not a lot, but that kind of gets people out of that pipeline. And I think in general, you've got lenders actively managing their treatment of these properties and certainly pushing them all through and recognizing all of the losses at once is not a viable financial alternative. So you're kind of getting them, getting it managed and spaced out, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Well, in practical terms, it's starting to work, because if you really have this low of inventory, I know Long Beach happened to notice again in a presentation, they have under 2 months of inventory. If you have under 2 months of inventory, you're going to have higher comps emerge from that situation.
Yeah, and that brings up the issue of appraisals, which is a big problem. And you know, appraisals are always viewed as a problem in a turn in the market. So there's always a little bit of a lag, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly this time around, it is a quandary, both on the appraisal side and more generally on the lending side. It just seems to be a little backward to me. You know, in retrospect, in 05 and 06, things should have been super tight because we were at the top. And now that we're climbing out of the bottom, it's like, very, very difficult to qualify. And the reality is, you know, this is rock bottom.
Yeah.
So it just seems to be a little bit out of whack.
It is. The payment that's emerging, and that's as reflective in your affordability chart, we're at numbers we've never seen before in history, which means that the payment in relationship to earnings is a historical all-time low.
Right. You know, and I also think with respect to rates that people are savvy and they understand that this really is a once in a generation opportunity to buy in these kinds of circumstances with affordable prices and affordable rates. So I think that's the, you know, another thing that's happening as the economy has started to show some life. And again, it's not enough and we need a lot more. But if you look at the just macroeconomic data over the last 6 months or so, it is getting better. You know, and the employment data, while not consistently great, it's a lot better than it used to be, right? And so there's kind of a general feeling, and it's going to be up and down. You know, the consumer confidence data that came out this morning showed a kind of retreat a little bit. But in general, we're still way up from where we were 2 or 3 years ago.
It would seem to me that if somebody at the top was in charge of saying, okay, are we better off if people have their housing costs fixed for 30 years at this ridiculous rate so they can pay more taxes? The answer would have to be a resounding yes.
Right.
As
absolutely.
Opposed to being a renter with a variable housing cost for the rest of their life.
You know, Bruce, this just reminds me of a comment I want to make, and maybe this will resonate with you as well. But I really felt like 3 years ago, as we were just kind of coming off the shock and the worst of all this, there seemed to be a general consensus that if we fix housing, if we help these homeowners, and hence TARP and all of the other programs and HAMP and HARP and everything that was originally envisioned back then the rest of the economy will follow. And it just seems that more recently there isn't really a consensus that it's about housing anymore. And I think that's a little bit of a mistake because, as you noted, you have a significant number of households, both in California and nationally, that are underwater. And, you know, certainly, you know, people need to take responsibility for their financial decisions. On the other hand, there certainly were bad actors and all kinds of other stuff going on. And it just seems like maybe more of an effort made to assist housing will help everybody down the pike.
You know, it's interesting because I've spoken in front of Fannie and FHA. Sean and I got to go back to Washington, D.C. and talk to them. And one of the programs that we discussed was a Nothing Down Loan program, which is be perfectly timely. I don't know what to do with people that live in Hesperia that owe twice as much on their home.
Right.
I don't really think we should reduce all the mortgage debt. But I do think we should say, you know what, we need to have a certain percentage of occupant owners. To me, that makes sense. And
Right. There's
a generation that can get into homes right now. The down payment is really immaterial. It's the payment that results from the purchase that will make that loan safe.
Right.
And you could move a lot of homes to the occupants if they didn't have to have a down payment. And one little change to the loan program, if they don't make their payment, let it walk to another buyer. Simple FHA assumption like we used to have in the 70s. Just one loan program change, and I think you could solve this thing. You know, again, it's frustrating when you look at the practical decisions that could be made. And actually, a gentleman named Raphael Bostic, who's with FHA, he was across the table from me, and I was talking about things like that. He said, I don't have any problem with that, you know, having the loan walk to another buyer. I said, would you put that in writing for me? And he laughed. He said,
right.
He said, no, I can't do that. But he understood that that would be a valuable thing for the market.
Yeah. No, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, a lot of this stuff isn't that complicated. We just need to, you know, get support and institute it.
And I think that's the problem is that, and here he is a decision maker for HUD, and yet the decision really didn't sit with him. It sets in Congress, and I have a feeling that a lot of those people don't necessarily understand everything they need to.
No, I'm sure that's true.
Yeah. One of the things that, you know, we do a fair amount of looking at charts ourselves, and there's been a really big change in the criteria both Fannie and FHA are willing to loan to. So FHA in particular, in 2007, at the peak of the market, 45% of their loans were made to people with 618 FICO scores or less. And now
right.
3%
right.
are 618 or less. That's a radical shift.
No, it is. And, you know, when we were back recently, back in D.C. for the NAR meetings, there were several people from FHA kind of talking about the situation that they find themselves in. So they're under a microscope with mm-hmm. respect to Congress in order to kind of justify the program and keep the program stable and kind of prepare for delinquencies, which have been on the rise. So I don't think this clearly isn't an accident. They're trying to reduce their risk exposure. But again, I think it, like you're suggesting, it needs to be looked at kind of more holistically in terms of what's going to be good for the overall economy in the long term. And some of those people are probably great credit risks.
Yeah, and as far as a safe pile of loans, they've created the safest pile of loans ever in 2011 in their history.
Yes, absolutely.
The problem was when you're loaning in California in 2008 and 2009 as prices descend 3% a month, the equivalent of the down payment,
right.
that's not going to work out too well.
Right. And I think the other thing that just keeps getting drilled in over and over again is, you know, California doesn't look like the rest of the country. And I think you're probably aware of the whole, you know, the bulk sale pilot that's coming out of the GSE, Fannie Mae.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been opposed to that just because we're not having problems selling REOs. And if they, you know, market them for 120 days and still can't sell them, then maybe. But let us, you know, let our industry have a shot at moving things through quickly in a less costly manner, and give the Californians that are really anxious to own real estate an opportunity to do so. But in other parts of the country, this dearth of inventory is not a characteristic of their market. So it's, again, California's always out there, you know, on its own, and this is just another case of that.
You know, it's got to be very frustrating to be an REO agent with the capacity. You know, some of the people that we know personally had 600 listings in 2008, have 60 listings today. So they're one-tenth capacity. They could easily absorb almost any percentage of increase of REOs into their business model and benefit the local economy by creating commissions and escrows and repaired houses.
Right. We don't need Wall Street to come in
no.
and do that for us.
I'm very resentful.
We've been very vocal on this issue and seem to at least have made the position crystal clear to the head of FHFA and everyone else back there. So we'll see.
I hope that makes sense to people, because one of their mandates is supposed to be to save the taxpayer money. I can't see how selling in bulk accomplishes that either.
No, I can't either.
So let's just let investors figure out, or local owner-occupants figure out what they'll pay. It has to be more than a bulk sale to a hedge fund. It has to be.
Right, right.
What's the mood of the buyer like in the marketplace?
You know, I think I would have to describe it as a mix of elation and frustration.
Okay.
You know, understanding that things pencil out. It's cheaper to buy than to rent. This is amazing. I can get, you know, FHA 3% down. It's wonderful. But on the other hand, it's one disappointment after another. I mean, the horror stories that I hear from, agents in our association about, you know, 5 offers, 10 offers, 19 offers, 30 offers. It just blows your mind, you know. So it's a very, very competitive market out there, and just very important to set the expectations of what they're getting into, because I think there's still, especially for people that are doing this for the first time, you read the headlines and you think, boy, this is going to be a slam dunk. I'm going to go into this ritzy neighborhood and pay 50 cents on the dollar and, you know, get a loan, and everything's going to be really easy. And it's not like that at all.
Well, the nice part is it's already priced at 50 cents on the dollar. You don't have to get a discount.
Right, exactly.
As a matter of fact,
let me explain the historical perspective here on these prices.
Well, you know, I think people really, they drive me nuts, especially when they're searching for a home. So, you know, I'm an investor speaking, and someone will come up and say, I'm looking for my residence. And then they're very specific about what they want, and then they want a deal. And I look at them and I say, you know what? This is a deal. You have the best price and the historical best interest rate, and you're going to miss the opportunity of a lifetime by trying to be cheap when you really need to figure out, I get a chance to get the home of my dreams at a number per month I could never have imagined.
Right.
And, you know, and that's, and a lot of times, you know, the inventory they're chasing really isn't being chased by investors. You know, some of them want the what was the $1.5 million house that's now the $750 house. We don't mess with that house.
Right.
So there's little less demand on that type of product. Now, there may not be an awful lot of listings on even in that price range, but I just think people sometimes think a discount is a big deal when, in fact, getting the right inventory to live in, the house to live in, to me is much more important.
Well, I think it is, too. And I, you know, I follow a lot of just local areas, because the aggregate data is always going to be the aggregate data, you know, so you want to look into it much more deeply. And there aren't a lot of listings. I mean, there just isn't a lot to choose from. So that kind of creates, I think, this environment of, wow, what a great time to buy, but why can't I buy?
Well, you know, one of the things that, you know,
why can't I find a home?
The short sale process has to be crazy making if you're an owner occupant. You know, where you make an offer and you really don't know what's the answer for quite some time.
Yeah, well, those rules are going to be changing. So you need in June. So you're going to get a response, thumbs up or thumbs down, within 30 days.
Now, one of the problems,
I think that's going to help a little bit, but.
Well, what if they literally are so overwhelmed? We know somebody that's in the B of A short sale department.
Yes.
They personally have 1,000 files. So the easy answer will be no.
Right,
because
exactly.
There is no other answer that will emerge inside of 30 days.
Right. No, that's a very good point.
And so, you know, that's, I think, well-intended. It seems like if you really don't have a time to make an intelligent decision, and it's only because you personally have 1,000 files, then the answer, if it has to emerge in 30 days, might more often be negative than it needs to be.
Right.
So
no, that's a good point.
So you probably have to start it again. Is the short sale process, are you hearing, we have about a minute, 20 seconds to go, has it been improving? Have agents said it's at least reasonable now or not?
You know, it's mixed. I'm hearing that things are much better than they were a year ago. Occasionally, you hear people closing in 45 days or 60 days relatively quickly. I talked to a realtor, a manager out in the Conejo Valley, got his report this morning, and he said it's getting a little more difficult again. So I think it kind of ebbs and flows, but in general, there's just been such a spotlight on that whole process for the last couple of years, that I think it is getting better, and people seem to be slightly more satisfied with what's going on. Some lenders more than others.
Yeah, I've always heard that's true. It varies greatly depending on.
It does. Not naming any names, but there tends to be some significant discrepancies between the experience that the home buyers and sellers and agents have, depending on the lender.
Well, Leslie, we've run out of time for the first segment. You can go to www.car.org to keep up on all of the statistics. And, Leslie, thank you very much for joining us.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.